The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
And what I thought of talking about today is mindfulness. So that's a nice lead-in to what Max is going to be doing for the next 6 weeks. I could think of a basic definition of mindfulness. The more I practice, the more almost mysterious mindfulness becomes. I'm not even sure I know what exactly it is. It seems to have that. I mean, we could use some certain words to describe it: presence, awareness. But there's something about it not just being in a moment, but established over some time, that's very supportive for our entering into this unfolding life. And so, one kind of working definition, I like to just start with a working definition so we all have a sense of what we're talking about. Perhaps we could talk about mindfulness as being this function of our minds, a very natural process of our minds that has the capacity to know what's happening in the present moment while it's happening. It's an ordinary capacity of mind, something that our minds naturally do. In a way, this kind of, one of the things that makes us human in a way is this capacity to, the word is self-reflexive, that there's a self-reflexive consciousness, that the awareness can know that it is aware. We can know that we are aware. And in a way, this is one of the things that makes us human. There are a few animals that apparently have this capacity to know that they are, to know that they are aware. And one of the ways that they test this apparently is with mirrors. If you put a mirror in front of many animals, they think it's another animal. A bird will peck at a window thinking it's another bird, or a cat will like go around the back of the mirror trying to find where the other cat is. I believe that certain mammals, dolphins, one of the ways they test this is by putting a mark on the body somehow. And if a chimpanzee or something, if you put a mark on the body, they will, try to go to their own body to remove it or to see what's going on there. So this capacity to be self-reflexive, to know that we are aware, is an unusual thing in the animal kingdom, and it is a capacity that the Buddha really highlighted as being, it's kind of something we take for granted in a way. When we become aware that we are aware, mostly what we do with that is notice what we've become aware of and start thinking about it, or trying to figure out what to do about it, or get rid of it if it's unpleasant, or try to get more of it if it's pleasant. And so we don't often actually recognize this capacity itself. Oh, this capacity, I can be aware of myself. We don't recognize the capacity itself as being something that's useful to cultivate or to notice. And this is one of the things I think that the Buddha was so brilliant about the Buddha. He highlighted this capacity. He said, this capacity is useful. Pay attention to it. Cultivate it. And one of the ways in to cultivating it is to become aware of what's happening in the present moment. To know that this is an experience happening in the present moment. There's a poem I'll read you from the Buddhist text. I'll read you part of the poem. I won't read you the whole thing. But it points to this waking up, noticing what's happening right now. Let not a person revive the past or on the future build one's hopes. For the past has been left behind and the future has not been reached. Instead, with insight, let one see each presently arisen state. Let one know that and be sure of it, invincibly, unshakably. Today the effort must be made. Tomorrow death may come. Who knows? No bargain with mortality can keep the hordes of death away. So this first part, let not a person revive the past or on the future build one's hopes, for the past has been left behind and the future has not been reached. This speaks to a lot of how we live our lives when we, in the moment, basically we think about the past and the future. That's a huge part of how we live our lives. I know that before I had met the meditation practice, I just kind of assumed that was what being a human meant. And we thought about the past and we thought about the future, and maybe we regretted the past, or we wanted to create a different past or a better past, or we beat ourselves up about the past, or we congratulated ourselves about our past, or and then the future, you know. It's like, oh, how great it's going to be, or how horrible it's going to be, or what it's going to be, or when it's going to be, or why it's going to be. It's so many different relationships to the past and the future. And in doing that, we're basically missing what's happening right now. I mean, like, before I really became aware of the present moment, of being mindful in the present moment, I lived a lot of my life in this world of thinking about the past and the future. And essentially, we miss what's happening. I mean, the present moment is the only place anything happens. Even our thoughts of the past or our thoughts of the future, those are happening right now. That's a phenomenon. It's something that's happening right in this present moment. The past doesn't even exist anymore. What did you say? Maybe you should leave it on. Let not a person revive the past, for the past has been left behind. Reviving the past is essentially this, you know, the thinking process that happens right now. When we don't know that what's happening in the moment is that we're thinking about the past, but somehow we're believing the thoughts as having some kind of a reality, that's reviving the past. And this happens actually, I mean, we know that the past isn't here. I mean, we know that. We have a sense of that, but that's not how our minds work when they're in that world of the past. I had a very clear recognition of this at one point. I had broken up with a partner years before this time had happened, and had done a lot of work on the anger and the resentment and the bitterness around that relationship. And so at some point, thoughts about the past with that relationship began arising with very little charge. So there wasn't a kind of a, you know, an emotional reactivity to that. But I would still find my mind in this world. At one point, I remember very clearly waking up into this thought of being with my ex-partner somewhere doing something. And when the mind came out of that reflection, there wasn't anger or resentment, but there was confusion. Because in that moment, the mind had lived in that creation and believed while it was in there that that was the reality. So for those few moments, the mind had reconstructed the past, had revived the past, had lived in that reality, had actually believed that reality. And then when I came out and was like, oh, I'm actually walking down the street, you know, this is what's happening right now. As I'm walking down the street, there was confusion. It's like, what? Am I in relationship with that person? No, I'm not in relationship with that person. So there had been this believing in the thinking. This happens a lot to us. It happens a lot. And so this recognition, you know, this what was actually going on in that moment was thinking was arising in the present moment, but that wasn't what I knew. What the mind had done was kind of absorbed into that thought and believed the reality that that thought had created. There is the possibility. I mean, it's not that we are trying to get rid of thoughts entirely. You know, we're not. It's like, but what we are trying to recognize is that when we think, it's something that's happening right now in the present moment. So thoughts arise about the past. Can we know? Oh, thinking about the past is happening. It's useful for us to be able to think about the past. It's useful for us to know, this is what happened in the past, and these were the consequences of that. This is how things are in this moment. Related to that. So, you know, there's a discerning, there's some wisdom that can happen through reflecting about the past. But if we have that process happen where we get absorbed into that reality, the wisdom around it is much less available because we're basically living in an unreal world in that moment. A very similar process happens about the future. That's even more kind of amazing. I mean, at least the past, we're thinking about things that perhaps happened. It may be not completely accurate, or it's our version of the past, you know, the whole, I don't know if some of you are familiar with the Kurosawa film Rashomon, which describes an event. It was a murder that was described, and there's these different perspectives on what happened. People, you know, each had their own reality around that event. It's a great film. I encourage you to see it if you haven't seen it. That's what happens. You know, we each construct a reality, and that's the perspective that we bring. And there can be very different perspectives of that reality. And so even our thoughts about the past have a flavor to them, but they generally are related to something that we went through. And a lot, I think, the experiences around the past have what we might call an emotional reality, at least. You know, that it is the reality that we, the emotions related to it are connected to the reality that we lived through. Our perspective of that has an emotional impact on us. And so, you know, our thoughts about the past have, you know, some flavor to them. One of the teachers in the teacher training has this phrase for looking at our experience. Even in the present moment, I mean, even in the present moment, we have our own perspective on what's going on that may be very different. I mean, looking at the past is one way we can see these different perspectives, but even right in the present moment, we have different perspectives on what's actually happening. And this teacher in the teacher training, Vinnie Ferraro, has this phrase, let's compare hallucinations. You know, so what's happening right now, what we are experiencing is a construct of our own minds, our own emotions, whatever's happening inside, and something about what's happening outside. But what's going on, what we are experiencing is entirely constructed in our, what we are actually experiencing. Like even this contact of my hand against hand or contact here, what I know in this moment is the experience of it. Like, I mean, I think that there's a black cushion sitting here. I see this, the black. I feel this. I feel my hands contacting it. But what I know of it is that there's sight and there's touch. And that's an inner experience. All that we know of the present moment, even, is our inner experience. And so hence this, let's compare hallucinations. And the future, You know, what's happening when we think about the future? Again, it's an idea arising in the present moment. And so thoughts of the past arising in the present moment, thoughts of the future arising in the present moment, all there is this split second, that's it. And thoughts of the future, we take birth into those too. This is the let not a person revive the past or on the future build one's hopes, for the past has been left behind and the future has not been reached. So the building one's hopes on the future, I mean, that's a funny way to put it. I mean, it sounds like we are exclusively in a hopeful scenario as we build thoughts of the future. I have definitely seen in my own experience that building disaster scenarios. But constructing something. It's like, what if that happens? What if that happens? What if that happens? And building, you know, 18 different scenarios and sort of having this idea that if I prepare myself for all those scenarios, then somehow I'll be in shape to meet all of them. So it's useful, this process of being able to project into the future. Again, not saying that it's that in living in the present moment that what we need to do is just sit on this knife edge and be in this, like, you know, what's happening right now without any thoughts about anything. Thoughts are a process that's very useful. Thoughts about the future is very useful. But to what we often do is create realities out of them. We believe that what we are projecting into the future will come true, or you know, maybe even is true. I remember, again, around this same relationship before we broke up, having thoughts about something that person might do and then getting mad at them because, well, it was in the terrain of something that they might do, but, you know, they hadn't done that. But the mind got mad anyway, you know? So... So this, you know, this process of creating thoughts about the future, again, there can be a kind of believing it and a reacting to it, or a preparing, that kind of preparing about all these different scenarios. How do I prepare myself for all these different scenarios? One of the things that, as I began to be mindful, began to recognize, oh, this is actually something that's happening. You know, the mind is creating future thoughts, and it's trying to prepare for them. At least there was a little bit of mindfulness of knowing, well, this is happening in the present moment, and feeling into actually just how much suffering it was to be doing that, how much anxiety was being created in the present moment, how much restlessness of the mind was happening in the present moment as it tried to figure out how to respond to all these different scenarios. So there was a little bit of that reflection of how it impacted the present moment to be involved in that process of preparing for so many different scenarios. But then the continuation of the exploration was, as the time rolls on, as the present moment continues and unfolds, the future kind of comes into the present, you know. Today becomes tomorrow, and tomorrow, and tomorrow, and we enter into the time of the things that we've projected. So, you know, it's like, okay, I've got this presentation. I need to think about all the different questions people might ask. You know, various things like that. What I began recognizing is that when what future I imagined became the present I was living, almost never did any of the scenarios that I imagined actually happen. And so all that preparation that I did, all that anxiety I felt, all that restlessness of the mind had been pointless, because there was no way I could have anticipated what actually happened. And then if something in the vicinity of what I imagined actually did happen, what I discovered is that the imagination I have had of, oh, if that's what happens, then this is how I will respond. This is what I will do. My capacity to respond in that way, I almost never could do it. I could only respond based on how I was in that very moment. And so all of that planning, all of that anxiety and all of that was kind of wasted. You know, sometimes we also project into the future around pleasant things. I think sometimes we do this because what's happening in the present moment may not be so pleasant. I'll talk about that in a moment. But again, you know, we're creating a reality in our minds. You know, maybe fantasizing of, oh, you know, someday I'll be, you know, able to do just what I want to do. And we're living in that scenario and maybe experiencing some ease or some happiness with that imagination. This is another way the mind works, you know. If there's something happening right now, the mind does the best it can to create a container in which there can be some ease. And very often one of the things that the mind will do is to create a fantasy of ease. And so the mind can, the being can have some release and some relaxation in that fantasy. This is it's a very common strategy to release kind of stress in the present moment. And yet what happens when we, you know, have to actually take a step in the present moment, when we actually have to get in our cars and drive somewhere, and we actually have to be here, that fantasy, we can't live in that fantasy. We see that we can't live in that fantasy, and here we are with whatever it is that we wanted to be avoiding with that fantasy. So one of the things that I've really discovered, and what the Buddha is pointing to, is that if we can begin to enter into this present moment with mindfulness, not saying that we don't think about the past and the future, but recognize, oh, thoughts of the past, thoughts of the future, they happen right now. And this is all that we have. This is it, this moment. We have no idea if we'll get another it. Today the effort must be made. Tomorrow death may come. In the next moment death may come. We do not know. Truly, we do not know. We live in this illusion that we have time for things. We have time to live in the future. But all there is right now. All there is. And so coming into this present moment, as the Buddha pointed to mindfulness of the present moment, being aware of what's happening right in this present moment, what we're doing is we're coming into all there is. The only thing there is this moment, this present moment. And what I've discovered is that all of that future planning, for instance, the best way that this being can prepare for whatever comes is by learning how to be in this moment right now. Because that will help me to learn how to be in whatever moments unfold in the future. Whether it's pleasant, whether it's unpleasant, learning how to meet this moment, learning how to not resist it, not push it away, not try to hold on to it and think, this moment, this is the moment that I want the rest of my moments to be like. But just recognize, this too is passing. This too is a moment that will come and will go. And so having kind of an open hand around this flow of life right through this moment, this stream of experience happening, neither trying to push it away, recreate it, resist it. It's already happening. If any kind of resistance to it is like adding, the Buddha talked about if there's something unpleasant that's happening in the present moment, if there's resistance to it or aversion to it, basically what we're doing is adding unpleasant mental reactivity to unpleasant experience. You know, we have some physical painful experience and we're reactive to it. We're adding a mental reactivity to a physical unpleasant situation. And so what we begin to see in coming into the present moment is the possibility of aligning ourselves with just this. This is what's actually happening. Can I know that? Can I know that? Not resist it, not push it away, not try to keep it or hold on to it. Can I just know it? Neither creating aversion around it or desire around it, but just like this is what's offered in this moment. Can I be with this, including our thoughts, including our emotions? We're not trying to become some kind of automaton that's non-responsive to the world. But can we come into this moment and be here for it? Learning that we start to see that so much of what is challenging for us, you know, so there are things that are unpleasant in our world that are hard to meet. Real situations of friends or parents with loved ones with illness, or ourselves with illness, pain, real situations of confusion in the mind that leads to violence against people of other races. And these truly challenging experiences arise in the present moment. Can we, rather than contracting around them, be available to be a witness? And to see, perhaps, as we open our hearts to being available to being a witness, not resisting, not holding on, something different begins to happen. And it's not that we just become this passive, like, lump of just like, oh yes, that's what's happening. A kind of a motivation, a responsive motivation from love, from compassion, begins to arise. In the moment, we feel that we open to a kind of a deeper call to be responsive to suffering in the world, be responsive, non-reactive, not hating, not pushing away, but opening to and responding. This is a possibility of what it means to come into the present moment, that our hearts can take in non-reactive to the suffering of the world and also the joys of the world. You know, another thing that sometimes happens is that when somebody has something beautiful happen to them, rather than celebrating, wow, that's so fantastic, we start feeling like, oh, why not me? Why is somebody else having happiness and I'm not? And so this possibility of, as we enter into the present moment without resistance, we can celebrate the joys and be open, compassionate about the sorrows, and live in this world with a heart that is responding and resonating rather than tight and resistant. So this process, it's a process. It's, you know, it sounds, it's not simply coming into the present moment that everything is okay in that way. I mean, you know, sometimes we might think, okay, yep, okay, I'm being mindful, but boy, it's sure unpleasant, you know. What we begin to see as we come into the present moment is how our, you know, this very pushing away of the unpleasant or this trying to hold on to, you know, some situation is like, ah, I need this to continue. I need this to stay. You know, that's one of the analogies for that is that we get rope burn. As you know, it's like what's happening is that a rope is just slipping rapidly through our hands and we're trying to hold on desperately to this situation and our hands get burned as the rope just slides through. Trying to hold on to some present moment experience creates the suffering of that holding, a kind of a rope burn in our hearts. And so we see that much of the way that we struggle in the present moment, and we want to flee, we want to create those fantasies or, you know, there may be different strategies. My mind in thinking about fleeing to the future was about control. It's like, well, okay, this moment's unpleasant, but if I can control the future, and that was that kind of planning and organizing, that brought some kind of relief to my mind to think about being able to control the future. And so there was a little bit of pleasant sense of that as the mind was trying to control the future. We might construct fantasies as a way to escape the difficulty of the present moment. But what we start to see as we actually land in the present moment is how much this resistance or holding on is why we are having such a difficult time with the present moment. The present moment is just really actually rapidly flowing through. And the movement of like resistance or holding on kind of like stops that flow, creates a kind of a wrench in the works. And that wrench in the works is a lot of why we want to flee. So we start to see as we come into the present moment, and this takes some trust, it takes some patience, a lot of patience to start to recognize, wow, yeah, a lot of the reason why it's so unpleasant right now is because I hate this. There's something happening, a situation that is out of control, and I hate that it's out of control. So there's the actual out of controlness of the situation, which is kind of truth. And then there's the mind that says it's not okay that things are out of control and is trying to do something about that. That is a lot of the out of control nature of reality, of experience, is a kind of fact of life. Impermanent, unreliable, is a place for our lasting happiness. It's changing so quickly and very much out of control often. Especially when we're suffering, we can really see this out-of-control nature of experience or impermanent nature of experience. And the resistance to that, truth of that situation, is a large part of why we want to flee. And this is what we start to see as we turn to what's happening right now. Well, there's this out-of-control experience, and then there's this aversion. Or there's this wanting that has its own feeling of contraction. And we start to see in the present moment, that aversion, boy, that aversion, we begin to distinguish. There's this situation that's happening. So-and-so's saying such and such, and I have no control over that person and their thoughts and their beliefs and their views and what they think of me and how they... I have no control over that. But what's happening right now is... So that's one thing that's happening. But then inside of me is this resistance of I don't like what they're saying and I want to fix them and I want to change them and I want to make sure they see me in a certain way. All of that is happening internally. It's separate. It's a different thing from what's actually happening out there that I don't have control over. There's this process happening in the mind. And as we start to be able to tease those apart, this is just one way, you know, the one example of how we start to see this in the present moment. As we start to see this in the present moment, we see this difference between what's happening and our response to it. We begin to recognize into, wow, this aversion itself, that feels really unpleasant. That contraction of desire, that feels really unpleasant. And as we are patient and willing to recognize, okay, that's happening, and there's this process of aversion happening or this process of desire happening, we start to see the difference between those two. Often we see that the reactivity that we have inside, sometimes, let's say sometimes, not often even, but sometimes we might see that the reactivity that we have inside is out of proportion to what's actually happening. I mean, a lot of our reactivity, sometimes at least, has to do with our idea of that thing that's happening going on and on and on and on into the future. And so we're creating not only reactivity to what's happening right now, but our imagination of it continuing forever. And it's huge. The way that we react is huge. And it's like, oh, there's this person saying something and having an expression on their face. And I'm imagining all that this means and what the impact is, and it means I'm going to be, you know, fired from my job, or, you know, who knows what we imagine. And we construct that future and react to that, and it all is happening right now, our reactivity. And so we start to see that that reactivity is a large part of why we are struggling. So the mindfulness of just what's happening in the present moment. Sometimes we see we're reacting just to our thoughts, our ideas, our beliefs about things. Sometimes we see we're reacting out of proportion to what's happening. Sometimes we see, yeah, what's happening, that war, that injustice, that is from all kind of ethical sensibilities, it's not right that that is happening, and yet it is happening. And so sometimes we see that our reactivity around some major injustice or something that's happening in the world in our immediate or broader lives, that we have a call to action. A lot of what we see when we open into our present moment experience and see that we're actually reacting to so much that's constructed in our minds, we start to see a lot of our sense of, oh, I need to do this and do that. It's a lot of sound and fury signifying nothing, to quote Shakespeare. There are times, though, when we come into the present moment and there is a call to action. And the question is, can that call to action come from, rather than hatred, rather than fear or confusion, can that call to action come from really recognizing that situation is arising out of suffering? And have a kind of sense of an open heart that acts from compassion rather than anger, hatred, and fear. And I have to say that, you know, that's a movement, that's a direction we head. It's not something that we can say, you know, I'm only going to act when I feel, oh, pure compassion in my heart. We probably, as we come into the world and feel this call to action, will have both the anger and the sense of the possibility of understanding. You know, I remember having a recollection around my past and seeing, you know, how much I had suffered around a particular event and how much that was shaping my life right now. And then recognizing in retrospect, even just the retrospective recognition, oh, that person was doing the best they could. You know, that person was suffering. There was a huge kind of letting go of the anger around that. And more of a sense of, wow, you know, that situation between us, some of it was about, you know, that person was acting unskillfully, but and that impacted this being, that person was acting unskillfully. But that unskillful action was more about that person's own inability to contact their own suffering. And it was landing on, coming out into their actions. And so that recognition of suffering being, you know, we step into our own present moment and feel into just how much our own reactivity influences how we navigate the world. And we, in that recognition, there's like this understanding, because we are sentient beings and we understand that we're all sentient beings. There's an understanding that this mind and its reactivity, this is not the only mind that's operating in reactivity. There are 7 billion minds out there acting this way. No wonder there's so much suffering. No wonder there's so much injustice. I remember having one very clear insight, seeing a thought arise about my ex-partner and, you know, having this reactivity of like recognizing I wished that he would be suffering as much as I was suffering. And in that moment, there was enough mindfulness to see, wow, you know, the pain of that wish that another person be suffering. And I could see, you know, wow, that's the seeds of war right there in this mind. This mind is not immune to that wish. And so a lot of compassion comes around just how much suffering there is in the world. And from that compassion, a different way of acting can be born. So let not a person revive the past or on the future build one's hopes, for the past has been left behind and the future has not been reached. Instead, with insight, let one see each presently arisen state. Let one know that and be sure of it, invincibly, unshakably. That instead with insight, let one see each presently arisen state. What that speaks to is really clearly recognizing what's happening in this moment is an arising in this moment. This is a process that's unfolding in this moment. To know that clearly as we enter into, oh, this is aversion arising in this present moment. That thought arises, and this is aversion arising in this present moment. It does something to our mind and to our, that recognition of this is aversion arising in this present moment. This is the impact of aversion arising in this present moment. For me, seeing that over and over and over again, this is the impact of aversion arising in this present moment. This contraction, this confusion in the mind, these kinds of angry thoughts, this is the impact of aversion arising in the mind. Seeing that in the present moment, the mind begins to get an education. One of the most beautiful things about mindfulness practice is that it has this amazing capacity. As we open to aversion in the present moment, as we open to greed in the present moment, as we open to confusion in the present moment, and know, oh, this is something that's happening in the present moment. That's the insight part. It's a little bit of insight to recognize simply, oh, this is aversion happening in the present moment, as opposed to believing the aversion is something I need to do something with immediately. We recognize, oh, this is aversion that's happening in this present moment, and noticing its impact. As we explore that possibility with mindfulness, the conditions are created. This is one of the powerful things about mindfulness. When mindfulness meets, lands on, acknowledges, knows in the present moment, ah, this reactive state is arising. because the mind is aware of it and aware of the consequences of it, it begins to understand this is not a healthy way to be. This is not a way to be that promotes a state of well-being in this system, in this organism. And we are designed to move towards well-being. Our systems, I think it's called homeostasis, our systems are designed to move towards well-being. Only that movement towards well-being is often operating on incomplete information. And so as the mindfulness gets stronger, the more and more complete information is available in consciousness. So the recognition, oh, the state of aversion has this impact and it is not leading towards well-being. The system itself begins to reorient and begins to understand, oh, that's not helpful. Maybe there's another way. And so the conditions of being present in the present moment for our reactive states begins to create the conditions for them to slowly unwind, release. Our minds begin to reorient towards a different way of being, with compassion, with love, with generosity, with wisdom, instead of with reactivity. And so as we bring our attention into the present moment and see those reactive states, instead of fleeing in fantasy or fleeing into thoughts of controlling the future, our system comes into a little bit more alignment right here and now, and there can be a sense of releasing, of alignment with, oh, this is just what's happening right now. So that's one of the ways mindfulness works. As we turn with mindfulness to just what's happening, it creates the conditions for those reactive states to diminish. And then, as we also turn our attention to the present moment, and at times, because it's not all wholly bad in there, you know, there are times when what we're feeling is love and joy and compassion and generosity and wisdom and well-wishing. When we turn our attention to the present moment and that is what's present, the system understands, yes, this is well-being. And it creates the conditions for that to become the orientation, that to become the direction that the mind wants to head. And so the coming into mindfulness in the present moment, coming into alignment with, okay, this is what's happening, and beginning to see our reactivity, beginning even to see, like, you know, on one retreat, long retreat, I was, you know, watching the mind do its things, and at one point, there was a lot of wandering mind, and I had this view at one point, you know, wandering mind is bad. Wandering mind takes me out of the present moment, so be here, hold on to that breath. And at some point, I began being more curious, rather, okay, well, the mind is wandering, what's it doing? You know, it's wandering off, it's thinking about friends, okay. Thinking about these friends that I knew in the Peace Corps. Okay, let's just know that that's what's happening in the present moment. These thoughts of friends are arising in the present moment. Images of my friends started appearing in the present moment. I was present for that. And what happened is that this huge sense of love appeared. You know, the mind was kind of orienting towards that quality, that wholesome, beautiful quality of love. And I was like saying, that's bad, don't go there. Because I had this belief around thoughts being, you know, out of the terrain of mindfulness practice. But can we open to what's actually happening right now? Maybe it is thoughts of the past. We open to that. What's happening as those thoughts of the past arise? Sometimes it might be revisiting some, you know, angry scenario, and then, pooh, what happens? We feel the anger right now. Okay, well, what can I be with that? Sometimes it might be love, compassion, joy. Can we know that? And so this coming into presence in the present moment, it feels like a magic power of mindfulness. I know it's not magic. It's very aligned with how we function as human beings. And thank goodness our system wants to head towards well-being. When mindfulness gives the system the information that's accurate about the present moment, there's kind of this movement towards all of those beautiful states and a releasing of all of those reactive states. This is a slow process. You know, it's not something that happens just because we sit down and say, okay, I'm going to be mindful of the present moment. Ah, oh, isn't it wonderful? It's a process. And yet it's so worth it. It's so worth it to come into this place of being basically in alignment with what's actually happening, and having our hearts not resist that we can respond in a more appropriate way. Well, I talked for the full hour, or not quite an hour, but I apologize, there's no time for questions. Thank you for your attention. I'm happy to stay here for a few minutes if any of you want to ask questions. So, the name of the poem. It's in the suttas. It's in Majjhima. It's in the Majjhima Nikaya. It's found three or four places in the suttas. It's the 131. So this is said to have been composed by the Buddha.